Today's reading will be from Esther, chapter 6, verse 1 through 14. That night, the king could not sleep, so he ordered the book of Chronicles, the record of his reign, to be brought in and read to him. It was found recorded there that Mordecai had exposed Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway, who had conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. "What honor and recognition has Mordecai received for this?" the king asked. "Nothing has been done for him," his attendants answered. The king said, "Who is in the court?" Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the palace to speak to the king about impaling Mordecai on a pole that he had set up for him. His attendants answered, "Haman is standing in the court. Bring him in," the king ordered. When Haman entered, the king asked him, "What should be done for the man the king delights to honor?" Now Haman thought to himself, "Who is there that the king would rather honor than me?" So he answered the king, "For the man that the king delights to honor, have them bring a royal robe the king has worn and a horse that the king has ridden, one with a royal crest placed on its head. Then let the robe and the horse be entrusted to the king's most noble princes. Let them robe the man the king delights to honor and lead him on a horse through the city streets, proclaiming before him, 'This is what is done for the man the king delights to honor.'" "Go at once," the king commanded Haman. "Get the robe and the horse and do just as you have suggested for Mordecai the Jew, who sits at the king's gate. Do not neglect anything that you have recommended." So Haman got the robe and the horse. He robed Mordecai and led him on horseback through the city streets, proclaiming before him, "This is what is done for the man the king delights to honor." Afterward, Mordecai returned to the king's gate. But Haman rushed home with his head covered in grief and told Zeresh, his wife, and all of his friends everything that had happened to him. His advisors and his wife, Zeresh, said to him, "Since Mordecai, before whom your downfall has started, is of Jewish origin, you cannot stand against him. You will surely come to ruin." While they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs arrived and hurried Haman away to the banquet Esther had prepared.
Typically in a movie, there is a point that is the climax of the movie. It's the suspenseful moment where the antagonist and the protagonist face off. It's the point where Batman battles the Joker, or Superman comes up against Lex Luthor, or Maximus is battling Commodus. It's that critical moment in the movie. And we have a lot of suspense wrapped up in that moment for a couple of reasons. Number one, because it's the moment that the movie's been leading up towards. We know that it's coming. We've just been waiting for this moment. Now it's here. Number two, we don't know exactly what's going to happen in this climactic moment. We don't know who's exactly going to win and how they're going to win. And then number three, what happens in that moment is going to shape the end of the movie. And so because of that, it's a very suspenseful moment, the most suspenseful moment in the movie. Well, we've been viewing the story of Esther kind of like a movie. And if you viewed it that way, the climactic moment of the story would be found in Esther chapters 5 through 7. Chapters 5 through 7, which we're going to look at this morning. If you're our guest, we've been studying through the book of Esther, and we've entitled our series, God's Behind the Scenes. And we have this movie paraphernalia up here on podium because we're viewing it kind of like a movie. It really functions like a movie. Different scenes, different settings, different characters. And last week we introduced the character of Esther, the main and dominant character of the story. The story bears her name as the title. But if you notice in the story, the first four chapters of the book, Esther doesn't do a lot. Doesn't say much. Everything that happens, happens to her. She doesn't assert herself at all until the very end of chapter 4, where she makes a decision. She makes the decision to go to the king on behalf of her people. She makes the decision that she is going to identify with her people, that she truly is Hadassah, the Jewish woman, and she's going to go to the king and stand up against the injustice that Haman had started by developing this decree to kill off all the Jews. She's going to stand up against that and fight for her people and go to the king. And sometimes, you probably are aware, that sometimes when you make a big decision in your life about who you are and how you're going to live, it kind of energizes you and helps you start living better and with more enthusiasm. And that's kind of what we see with Esther. From this point on to the end of the story, Esther's going to do a lot. She's going to be doing all kinds of things. She's going to be saying things. She's going to be assertive. She's going to be a very active character. And that's kind of where we pick up the story in Esther chapter 4. At the beginning of chapter 5, that after fasting for 3 days, Esther decides to go ahead and go to the king. And if you remember from last week, we're not exactly sure what the king's going to do. We don't know if the king is going to extend to her the golden scepter and save her life, or if the king is going to say, I don't want you in my court, and either banish her from the king, from the palace, or maybe kill her. But when she walks into the king's court with her royal robes looking beautiful, the king looks at her and extends the golden scepter, gives her grace, allows her to be in his presence. And he says to Esther, Esther, what do you want? What is it that you request? I'll give you even up to half of my kingdom. I will give it to you. And Esther says, here's what I want. King, I want a banquet where you're there and where I'm there and where Haman is there. And we start to think, could this be the climactic moment that we've been waiting for, where the antagonist and the protagonist face off? Well, they get to that banquet and the king says, Esther, I know this isn't your request just to have a banquet. What is your request? Even up to half the kingdom, I will give it to you. What is your request? What do you want? And Esther says, I want another banquet where it's just you and where it's just me and Haman. And at that banquet, I will tell you what my request is. And so we know, okay, that wasn't the climax of the story, but the climax is coming. It's going to be in the second banquet because there she's going to give her request and there's going to be the face-off. Well, in between the first and the second banquet, there are these critical events that happen that kind of foreshadow what is going to happen in the second banquet. So after the first banquet, Haman starts to go home. Now, Haman is feeling really good. I mean, he has just been in this banquet. He's been having a great time. He's got all the wealth in the world that you could want. He's got all the power and authority that you could ever want. But then he sees that old, cantankerous Mordecai. And when he walks by Mordecai, Mordecai does not bow down. That's what everyone is supposed to do when they see Haman. But Mordecai doesn't bow down. And whenever you're a self-absorbed person like Haman is, when one little thing doesn't go your way, you just get bent out of shape and it bothers you. Now, none of us ever act like that, I know. I heard one preacher say that the theme song for Haman was Simon Carley's You're So Vain. Anyone heard of that song? You know, you're so vain. You probably think this song is about you. You know, it's the line in the song. That's his theme song. He is self-absorbed. Everything is to be about Haman. And when one little thing doesn't go his way, it bothers him. And so he goes home and he is miserable because of Mordecai. And he gathers up his wife, Zeresh, and his friends and his family, and he gathers them all together and he says, you know, I have a really good life. He starts to brag. I have a really good life. I'm so wealthy, and I am honored more than any other noble in the land. I'm second in command. And guess what? I was just from a banquet. And you know who was at the banquet? There were three people. It was the king, it was the queen, and me. Aren't I special? But then he says, and all of this gives me no satisfaction. As long as that cantankerous Mordecai keeps standing up whenever I walk by. It just just drives me crazy that Mordecai won't bow down like everybody else is supposed to do. Well, Zeresh, his wife, speaks up at this point. And Zeresh, as you're going to find out, is actually a pretty perceptive woman. I guess Haman married up when he married, because she's a pretty perceptive woman. And she says, Mordecai, if this mosquito man, Mordecai, is bothering you, then just swat him. Get rid of him. I mean, you have the power to do that, right? You can do whatever you want. You can kill him off if you want. So just get rid of him. That's what you need to do. And Haman thinks, oh, that's a pretty good idea. And immediately he makes efforts to get rid of Mordecai. And so he builds up these gallows on which he's going to hang Mordecai in the night. And then he decides to go to the king to get the king's permission so he can kill off Mordecai. And here's where it gets interesting. Because we turn the page to chapter 6. Chapter 6, and Lupi read it to us, is one of the most interesting chapters in the whole book of Esther, maybe in the whole Testament. One writer, one scholar said, it's the most ironic and comical chapters in the whole story, or maybe in the whole Old Testament. I didn't hear any laughter, but it really is a funny, funny chapter, right? There are 10 coincidences in the chapter, in chapter 6. More coincidences happen in chapter 6 than any other chapter in the book of Esther. And it starts that as Haman is coming to the king, it just so happens that the king can't sleep. Just so happens. And it just so happens that while the king can't sleep, he asks to be read to. Because there's no better way to get to sleep than to hear a voice drone on and on and on. Kind of like on Sunday morning when you hear the preacher drone on. I watch some of you guys, okay? You know, old Frank Berry, who passed away a few years ago, he would always tell me, Steve, I love to get the CDs of your sermons. I put them on right before I go to sleep, and I go right to bed. He meant that as a compliment, but I didn't know how to take that. And so that's why the king wants to be read to. He knows if I hear a voice that drones on and on and on, I'll go right to sleep. And so what do they read? They happen to read the chronicles of the kingdom. He wants to hear about all the good things that he's done and all the good things people have done for him. And it just so happens that they read this story back from chapter 2 where Mordecai reported a conspiracy. And what reward was given for Mordecai for doing this? Well, nothing was done for him. And right about the time that he's figuring this all out, he hears a, who is it? It's Haman. Oh, come on in, Haman. Come on in. You're here at the perfect time. I've got a good question for you, Haman. What is that? You know, what should be done for the man that the king delights to honor? And poor old Haman, remember his theme song? You're so vain. You think this song is about you? And so he hears that question, and he starts to think, oh, shucks, the king wants to honor me. Isn't that sweet that he wants to honor me? Now, have you ever had one of those moments where you thought someone was talking about you, and they really weren't? You know, a couple years ago, I was going to teach a couple classes at a conference in Alabama. And the director of the conference called me like a week or two before, and he was just double-checking on my arrangements and making sure that I could get there and that I knew what I was teaching on and all that kind of stuff. And in the phone call, he says to me, he says, Steve, I've been debating on whether to ask you this, but I'm going to go ahead and do this. And then he begins to tell me, he says, the keynote speaker just had to back out just recently. And so we need a keynote speaker. And in my mind, the train starts going down the track, okay? He's going to ask me to be the keynote speaker. And I know it's going to be hard because I only got a week and a half to prepare. But for the sake of the kingdom, I'm going to do it. You know, I'm just already going down that track. And right as I'm thinking about that, he says, could you ask Kent Brantley to do that? I said, Lord, thank you for giving me humble pie because I needed that. Well, that is precisely what happens to Haman. He starts, that train starts down the track. And he thinks, oh, the king wants to honor me. And so what would Haman want? He's got all the money that there is to get. He's got the highest position that there is to have. So what could Haman want? Royalty. That's what he wants, royalty. And so he says, I tell you what you should do, king. Put a royal robe on this man and put him on a royal horse and have one of the royal princes lead him around and say, this is what the king does for the man that he delights to honor. And I would have loved to see Haman's face, wouldn't you? When the king says, oh, that's a great idea, Haman. Do that for Mordecai. And Haman has to lead around the city streets and say, this is what the king does for the man the king delights to honor. He has to do that for the man that he wants to kill. The man he hates more than any other man. And we're introduced at this point in the story to a theme. And that theme is something called peripatie. I want you to say this word with me. Peripatie. It's actually an English word. It's a literary word, but it has a Greek background. And here's what the word means. It means a sudden turn of events or reversal that is unexpected. That's what we see here in chapter 6, peripatie. And what's interesting is this is just the beginning. This is just the beginning. There's going to be a lot of peripatie that's going to happen in the story of Esther. But this is the beginning. We would never have thought, if you're just reading the story all the way through, you would have never thought that Haman would be honoring Mordecai. You would never have thought that. And yet there is this reversal. This reversal. And how did that happen? God's behind the scenes. Well, Haman goes back home, and he is completely humiliated, covers his head in grief, and he does the same thing that he did before. He calls up Zeresh, calls up his family and friends, and tells them the whole sad story about what happened. And Zeresh speaks up. Remember, she's a perceptive woman. She speaks up, and I want you to notice what Zeresh says in chapter 6, It's chapter 6. I put chapter 5, but it's chapter 6, verse 13. Since Mordecai, before whom your downfall has started, is of Jewish origin, you cannot stand against him. You will surely come to ruin. You know, scholars think that this is the second most important verse in the whole book of Esther. The first important verse is chapter 4, 14. But this is the second most important verse. You want to know why? Because Zeresh figures something out. She figures out that there's something bigger going on here. Now, she doesn't know exactly what it is. She thinks it's because Mordecai is of a Jewish lineage, but she figures out there's something bigger going on here. There's some force at work here. There's a being that is doing something here, Haman. And if that is the case, you're not going to win. You're not going to win. And in her very remarks, she foreshadows what we know is going to happen in the climax. That God is going to save his people. And no matter how much Haman tries to stop it, he can't. Well, before Haman can think about this any further, he is whisked away to that second banquet, the climactic moment where the antagonist and the protagonist face off. And the king says to Esther, Queen Esther, what is your request? I know it's not to have these banquets. What is your request? You said you were going to tell us, even up to half the kingdom, I'll give it to you. And Esther then gives her speech that there is a man who is trying to kill off my people. And we're not a bad people. We're a good people. But this is an evil man who has developed this decree that's going to kill off all of my people. Well, who is that man? The king says. And then Esther points the finger and says, it's Haman. Haman. He's the man. And starting from this moment, there is incredible peripatie, incredible reversal. And Haman, the man who built gallows to kill off Mordecai, is killed on those very gallows. And Mordecai, that cantankerous man who got in Haman, stuck, that bothered Haman so much, he gets to be lifted up and becomes second in command where Haman was. And that decree that Haman developed that was going to kill off all of the Jews on this certain day, there's a new decree that is developed. And this new decree says that the Jews can fight back and they can be saved. And before, Mordecai was wearing sackcloth and ashes, and they were in terrible despair and depression about what's going to happen. And now Mordecai gets to wear the royal robes, being second in command. Before, the Jews were weeping and wailing over their situation. And now they're going to have joy. I think this part of the story, it teaches us something about God, and that is that God is a God of reversal. He's a God who can turn things upside down. You know, Jesus said in the New Testament, the first shall be last, and the last shall be first. I think we see a great example of that in the story of Esther. That the man high, he is brought low, Haman. And the man who was low, Mordecai, is made high. God is a God who turns things upside down. He's a God who brings reversal. And there are two reversals that happened in the story. The first reversal is that there was a reversal from peace to chaos because of sin. And I want you to hear this. Haman's life seemed to be going so well. It was peaceful. It was secure. He had everything that anybody could ever want. He had the power, right? All the wealth, all the authority, all the power that anybody could ever imagine, and that peaceful life became chaos because of sin. My dad used to say, Haman picked up the boomerang of sin and he threw it. And whenever you throw a boomerang, you can throw it a long ways and go far to where you don't really see it, but eventually that boomerang is going to come around and it's going to hit you, right? And that's what Haman did. He took up that boomerang of sin, and he threw it. He thought, I'm just going to kill off, commit genocide. And he threw that boomerang. He thought he was going to get away with it. He thought that everything was going to go his plan and his way. But that boomerang came back around, and it hit him, didn't it? It hit him. And his life spiraled out of control, ending in death. And the same thing can happen to us. You know, sin is very tempting. Sin is very tempting. Whether it's the sin of addiction or whether it's the sin of gossip or the sin of pornography or sexual sin, whether it's the sin of just trying to pursue more money and more wealth, consumerism, sin is very tempting. And whenever you engage in sin for a season, church, for a season, it seems like everything's okay. And that life is peaceful and secure, and you're gonna make it out all right. Nobody's ever gonna know what you did, and everything's just gonna be fine. But eventually, the boomerang is gonna come back and hit you. And your peaceful life is gonna spiral out of control into chaos, and it is not gonna be good. And so I think the first reversal in this story, it's kind of a warning for each one of us here that if we're engaging in sin, if we're participating in there's sin in our life, we need to repent. Because if we don't repent, get ready, because eventually that boomerang is going to come back and hit you. Get ready, because it will. Just like it did Haman, it will to us. There's a second reversal. The second reversal is a reversal from despair to redemption. Because of righteousness. This is the good part of the story. That here you had Mordecai and Esther and the Jews, and it seems as if everything was not going their way, and it seemed as if nothing good was going to happen, and that this was going to be the end of the story for God's people. And there was despair, there was weeping, there was wailing, and yet then God changed things. He brought reversal. He saved his people, and he brought redemption because of the righteousness of Mordecai and Esther. I like the way the psalmist puts it in Psalm chapter 30. It says, you have turned my wailing into dancing. You have removed my sackcloth and clothed me with joy. This verse describes Esther, doesn't it? This is the story of Esther in a nutshell, that Mordecai was wearing sackcloth sackcloth and ashes, and then he ends wearing royal robes. Before, the Jews were weeping and wailing. Now they have joy. Why? Because God worked. He worked behind the scenes, but he worked. And that's good news for us today. That wherever you are in your life, you might be in a moment of despair or hopelessness. You might be in a place in your life where things are not going your way. You might be in a situation that's a valley. And I've got good news this morning. God can change that. God is a God of reversal. He turns things upside down. And even though you might be in the valley right now, he can take your sackcloth and he can turn it to where you're clothed with joy. That's how good our God is. And so this story is a warning on the one hand with Haman, but it's a moment of hope that wherever we are, God can bring healing and redemption if we follow him. Did anyone catch in chapter 6 what the pivot point was? Where from this point, Haman's road started to decline, and Mordecai and Esther and the Jews' road started to incline. Did anyone catch that point? There's one little pivot point that scholars have noticed that everything seems to change around that pivot point. You know what that was? It was when the king couldn't sleep. If the king had kept sleeping in the middle of the night, then Haman would have come, awoken the king, explained the whole situation about Mordecai, and before daybreak had come, Mordecai would have been dead. And who knows what would have happened at that second banquet. But the king wasn't sleeping. He couldn't sleep that night, and because of that, the chronicles were read to him, and the whole story went from there. It was because he couldn't sleep. Things changed because he couldn't sleep. Well, the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation of the Hebrew scriptures, was done a little bit later, and for whatever reason, the scribes, when they were translating Esther, they just added a few little pieces here and there. Added a few little pieces for interpretation. And one of those places where they added something was chapter 6, verse 1. Do you know what they added? They said, "The Lord took sleep from the king." That from their perspective, it seemed to them that God was at work in that moment. And he irritated Xerxes that night to keep him awake. And from that point, the story changed. And I think that tells us something about God, that there's going to be moments in our life that are insignificant, that seem to be little moments, sleepless nights, conversations, Bible class lessons, sermons that we hear, that God might be in that moment irritating us to change our story, to bring reversal to our story. And our role is to make that choice that I'm going to follow the Lord, I'm going to repent of my sin, and I'm going to follow the Lord, and I'm going to let God bring hope out of my despair. And this morning, that is our choice. I know there are some of us here, and I don't know maybe specifically, but I know there are some of us here that there is some sin in our life, and if it's not dealt with, the peace in your life could become chaos. And we're going to have our elders surround this auditorium, and this is a great moment to walk to one of them and say, "Pray for me that I can have reversal." Or maybe you're in this place of despair and you want hope and you want redemption. It starts in Jesus Christ, giving your life to Christ. It starts in baptism, where your sins are washed away. And if you're ready to take that step, just come to the front during this song and we'll help you. If there's any way that we can pray over you and encourage you, please come now. Let's stand and let's sing at this time.